Happy Thursday, everyone. Today is February 11th, 2021, and welcome to Today in Sports History, the podcast that will make you the most interesting person at the water cooler, guaranteed. This is Laura Robin filling in today for Ross Parlon. Without any further ado, let's get started. In 1878, the first U.S. bicycle club, Boston Bicycle Club, forms. In 1928, the second Winter Olympic Games open in St. Moritz, Switzerland. In 1938, Steve Casey beat Lou Thesz in Boston to win the National Boxing Association World Heavyweight title. In 1950, Englishman Jack Holden won the Empire Games Marathon in Auckland, New Zealand in 2 hours, 32 minutes, and 52 seconds, running the last 9 miles barefoot after his shoes fell apart during the race. In 1957, the NHL Players Association formed in New York City. The Red Wings' Ted Lindsay was elected president. In 1965, the Braves proposed to pay 5 cents from each ticket to bring a new team to Milwaukee. In 1966, San Francisco Giants' Willie Mays signed the highest contract, $130,000 per year. In 1969, Diana Crump became the first U.S. woman jockey to ride against men. In 1970, John Lennon paid £1,344 in fines for 96 people protesting the South African rugby team playing in Scotland. In 1971, Montreal Canadian John Béliveau scored his 500th NHL goal. In 1973, the first sub-17-minute 1,500-meter female freestyle swim was completed by Shane Gould in 16 minutes and 56 seconds. In 1973 again, Philadelphia 76ers lost their 20th NBA game in a row. In 1974, Minnesota Twins pitcher Dick Woodson is first of 48 to invoke Major League Baseball's new arbitration rule. Tagging along to that, in 1974 again, the first Major League Baseball arbitration case took place, where the Minnesota Twins pitcher Dick Woodson seeked $29,000 in wins, and the Twins offered $23,000. In 1976, John Curry won Britain's first Olympic gold medal in figure skating at Innsbruck Winter Games. In 1984, Wayne Gretzky set the NHL shorthanded season scoring record at 11. In 1990, in a huge upset, James Buster Douglas KOs Mike Tyson in the 10th round in Tokyo, Japan, to win the world heavyweight boxing title. In 1995, Danyon Loader swam the world record 400-meter freestyle in 340 seconds. Again in 1995, Mark Foster swam the world record 50-meter butterfly in 23.55 seconds. In 1997, Bill Parcells became the head coach of the New York Jets. We'll be right back with our deep dive segment. Thanks for sticking around and welcome to our deep dive segment. 51 years ago today, John Lennon paid the fines of 96 people who were arrested for protesting against a rugby match taking place in Scotland. We figured that because of this event, today we could spend some time discussing how apartheid affected the sport of rugby. The tour that changed international sport ended 50 years ago. South Africa, number one in the world now and vying with New Zealand for supremacy then, returned home after 4 torrid months in Britain and Ireland when they were dogged by an anti-apartheid protest and failed to win any of their 4 tests. It was a rude awakening for the vast majority of the squad who had little experience of the world outside their homeland, their isolation fostered by the lack of television in the country. Springboks' victory driven by the strain of desire few others can comprehend. Europe was emerging into the world of color at the end of the 1960s. But black and white in South Africa amounted to a political system that was abhorrent in a world that knew the power of protests. The Springboks, as Chris Showman shows in his book on the tour, Rugby Behind Barbed Wire, were innocents abroad. There were exceptions, such as South Africa's vice-captain, Tommy Bedford, who studied at Oxford University, and warned at the official reception on the eve of the squad's departure that what lay ahead would probably be reflected in results. He was quoted as saying, "If we did not win all our games or even lost test matches because none of us would have had any idea of how to cope with this additional demonstration phenomenon, the people back home and those in the comfort of the function room should remember this." That went down like a lead balloon. A later speaker implied that Bedford was being disloyal. 50 years on, Bedford lives in London. He was so changed by the tour, identifying with the aims of the protesters to undermine apartheid through sporting isolation, if not all their methods, one of which involved the commandeering of the squad's coach when they were on board before a match and crashing it into parked cars. That after his test career ended in 1971, he committed himself to political change in South Africa. He was interviewed by the Rugby paper last November, after Siya Kolisi, the first black captain of the Springboks, had held aloft the World Cup in Yokohama and spoken movingly about his hope that rugby would help unify a divided nation. Those protesting in 1969 and 1970, the Stop the 70 tour was chaired by Peter Hain, and one of the organizers in Scotland was Gordon Brown, were written off by the rugby media in South Africa as idealists and do-gooders, irritants who did not understand rugby union's fraternity. If any of the reporters watched the 2019 World Cup, they should by then have come to appreciate not only what the protest was about, but that politics and sport were not mutually exclusive. Not least because governments such as South Africa's in the apartheid era used sport for sustenance. And it was South Africa who blocked Basil de Oliveira after the Worcestershire all-rounder was called up as a replacement for the Marylebone Cricket Club in the 1968 to 1969 tour, saying it was a politically motivated selection when it seemed that his original omission was exactly that. He was quoted as saying, "We knew that no other country could afford a tour like this. That was the catalyst for change in a radical way. When I got back to South Africa from the United Kingdom, I took time out. I went to a deserted part of the country, and I thought about Peter Hain, Bernadette Devlin, and all those anti-apartheid people who put us in this lager," meaning camp. "I came to the conclusion that maybe they did have a point." Showman largely concerns himself with the tour itself, his book ending with a short chapter entitled Aftermath. He interviewed several of the South Africa squad, including Bedford and the captain, Dawie de Villiers, who was to serve on Nelson Mandela's first cabinet following the fall of the apartheid regime, as well as a player from each of the four home unions. The Springboks lost against England and Scotland before drawing with Ireland and Wales, and were beaten by Oxford University, Newport, and Gwent in the first 2 weeks of the trip. Mandela was on Robben Island when the matches were played. A news blackout for the prisoners was undermined by the warders, who were unable to hide their frustration at both the results and the protests. Quote, "It was as if Mandela and his comrades were to blame," said Peter. His apartheid jailers were beside themselves with rage, and that gave him a glimmer of hope. The protesters succeeded in forcing the postponement of one match, Ulster, while the opener against Oxford University, which was played exactly 50 years before South Africa's victorious 2019 World Cup squad returned home, which is switched from Iffley Road to Twickenham on police advice. Protesters who invaded pitches in the early matches were often dealt with by stewards, not always leniently, prompting the government to decree that only the police could take such action. Personal memories of the tour are a disappointment that Cardiff were overwhelmed by players who were far bigger than the usual opponents at the Arms Park. The politics went over the head of a young boy whose questions were to find answers later as rugby, showing its amateur status then, continued to maintain links with South Africa, New Zealand, France, England, South America, Ireland, and the Lions all toured there at least once up to 1984. The visit of the Springboks to New Zealand in 1981 sparked protests that rivaled 1969 to 1970, and two matches were called off. New Zealand were due to visit in 1985, but their tour was called off after a high court ruling that it would contravene the union's stated purpose of fostering and encouraging the game of rugby. The Cavaliers went there the following year for money, according to reports. It was apartheid's last labored gasp, strangled by the sporting boycott. We want to thank you for joining us in this episode and hope to have you back for many more. Don't forget to subscribe however you're listening to us and follow and like us on all social media at Sport History Pod. Thank you to Jason Shaw at Audionautics for the intro music and to Ross Parlon, our script editor and director of this episode. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.